Hello, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Julia, this is going to be a fun podcast. You know why?
Why?
Because it's not going to be all about relationships and family. We're going to throw a little bit of real estate in there.
As usual. And as usual, I'm like outnumbered again. I feel like we have men on all the time, which is great. You guys are fun to talk to.
So next time you do it, you pick up the phone and you book the guests and you say, you know, Gino, because every time... Ironically
well, no,
enough,
that's not true. Because I've been booking the guys.
Exactly.
Lately.
You're like, I like this person.
Yeah,
get this person.
Yeah,
and I go on, get this person. True. Anyway, today, Dean Rogers, he began his career in NFL, but soon realized that if he kept playing, his health would be at stake. After walking away from the NFL, Dean transitioned his focus to his family and real estate. He built up his rental portfolio to almost $10 million and uses his knowledge to coach others on how to create their own successful businesses. Welcome to the show, Dean.
Thanks for having me.
This is exciting.
Look at your face is like, what did I just walk into here? So, I promise I'll pull it back. So
no, this is exciting because, you know, we're in the NFL. It's a big deal. I mean, it's probably every kid's dream, right? And I'm sure it was your dream. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to go there because I know you were married outside of college. So as you became, do you mind if I ask the first question?
Go ahead.
Are you okay? I'm curious, take me back to those days when you were still football, you were married, and the dynamics between you and your wife, because your wife, you know, married an NFL player.
Yeah.
And I want to know about that. I'm curious. I really wish she was on because I would love to talk to her, but let's get it from you.
So she didn't know that at the time. I mean, I was an NFL hopeful. Leading up to that point, we got together in high school. We were high school sweethearts. And we went, our whole dating time throughout college was actually a long distance relationship, which was super difficult. Usually doesn't work out for most people. I think we're both stubborn and I won't give up on anything. So I think that's the only reason it worked out, because it was extremely painful and difficult. But yeah, we were high school sweethearts, just fell in love. She likes to tell the joke all the time. When we first got together, I told her, don't think you're going to be falling in love with me because I'm not looking for anything serious. I'm just, you know, focused on playing sports and stuff. And then I told her I loved her like a week later or something, you know? So, that was our beginning story, but, you know, yeah, we fell in love and we had a long distance relationship there. We made it work. We would go see each other on the weekends. She'd come to my games when I was playing on the weekends, and on the off season, I'd come down and visit her. And, we just, as two lovebirds, we just fell deeply in love and, you know, didn't see spending life with anybody else. So we got engaged in college. And she had the bright idea. I don't know if she just knew I was going to the NFL or she just loved me that much. But she said, I think we should get married a month out of college. So that's what we did. And there we were. We were, broke, young, living at my parents' house. And I was training for the NFL. And that's how we started.
Wow. So when you got into the NFL, you only played for a year. What was this decision and how did you come about as a couple to make that decision? Because I'm sure it wasn't just your decision, like, I'm leaving. This is such a tough sport. I want to have some type of health when I retire. How did that conversation go about between the two of you?
Yeah, so it was a crazy time. I mean, just to highlight, I mean, you guys both said it at the beginning. It was a dream come true. It was such a surreal experience to be on the other side. I mean, growing up in a small town in Central California, you know, there was a lot of disbelief that it was going to be a reality, you know, and it didn't help that along my journey that I was really kind of overlooked. I kind of felt like the underdog, even though I would excel and rise to the top at each level, high school and college. I still always felt overlooked and kind of underappreciated. And so to get the call to go into the, you know, the big upstairs office and sign the 3-year deal, like it was super surreal. And then all of a sudden you're in the locker room with these guys that you played on the video games with, you know, like Philip Rivers and Antonio Gates and Vincent Jackson, these Hall of Famer guys that are now just sitting across from you, wanting to know more about you and having a conversation with you, and seeing the real person on the other side of what you see like on TV. So that whole thing is just super surreal. I know, Gino, you and I talked about this when we connected, that kind of like the modern day thing for you and I is when we go to masterminds, like when you meet some of these big time people that you admire and look up to, and now you're a peer and one of their equals, is pretty cool experience, you know?
So when you made that decision to leave and to retire after a year, there must have been some type of, I don't want to say depression, but some type of like letdown. You've been working at this your whole life. You had achieved the ultimate success of being drafted. And then all of a sudden it's like, I sort of got to give up on this dream, or I got to let it go for something different. How did that conversation go? And how did you feel throughout that transition?
Yeah. So easily the toughest decision that I've still made to this day. And, the tough thing for me going through that period of time is I'd like to say I was still young and very immature. I might have made some mature decisions at that time, but I was really immature with understanding who I was and how to process my thoughts, how to process my emotions. So the reality is during that whole time, I didn't talk to anybody about what I was thinking, what I was feeling, what I was wanting to do, the decision that I was kind of faced with, and just kind of went about it myself and just kind of optimistically just kind of moved along to the next thing without really giving reasons as to why to anybody, to my family, to my wife, to friends, anybody. It was kind of something I kept to myself in private. And for years and years, nobody really understood why. They just kind of thought that it was like, oh, it didn't work out, you know?
Did you feel as if you were quitting? Did you have that guilt of saying to yourself, and a follow-up question, why didn't you share it with anybody?
Yeah. It was such a mixed bag of emotions. It was really strange because, again, I've worked on it my whole entire life. This is what everybody could possibly want and desire to have, like, because when you're in that world, the world is your oyster. Like everything is accessible, you know, opportunities for money, for fame, for status. You know, you got supermodel women who are like walking around, you know, people who, you know, you've got everybody wanting to be your friend and have mm-hmm. access and time with you and give you more opportunities. So to walk away from that, you kind of got to be a little bit crazy. And that's why it's so hard for people to walk away from it, or to retire, because to be there is the pinnacle. It's the ultimate possible achievement. And so, yeah, it was all of that wrapped into also knowing that in kind of secrecy, I was kind of suffering with the decision of knowing if I kept playing, because I can't remember if I had told you this or not, Gino. But Julia, what happened was the head coach moved me from the position I played in college and really enjoyed to another position. I moved from tight end to fullback, and in the fullback position on offense, you can be considered like a battering ram. You're like a full-time crash test dummy. And I did really well at it. But in order to do really well at it, I had to use my head like a battering ram. And for me, I felt it right away. And I just had all these warning signals, you know, going off in my head that if I kept doing this, I was just going to die and be a vegetable. So, I kind of kept that to myself because, again, you don't want to come off as weak, right? I've talked about this with other NFL athletes and talked about, you don't go to the coach and say, hey, my head hurts. You know, you don't go to the trainers and say, hey, I think I need a break. You know, the next guy up is the thing, and someone else will take your spot. So you don't want to come off as weak. You don't want to kind of take it easy. And you've worked so hard to get there. Why would you just give it up? You know,
that's amazing because, you know, as you're talking and telling that story, I mean, it shows the strength that you had to walk away from it. And so a lot of us, just like you said, we go to school, we kind of follow the dream that we always had or what other people think we should do. We live that life for as long as we can put up with it, I guess. But you had strength and you had bravery to say, this is not for me. And I just, wow.
Baby, your dream came true, right? August 30th, 1998, when you got married. Your dream came true. Husband, you've been living the dream,
right,
baby?
I'm going to just put this out there because I'm kind of living this now. Yeah, but Gino above his office head, my dream in life is to live the life of my wife and children. And I just, and I would get irritated because when the kids are little, it's a hard life. But now I'm living the life. Like I just can leave the house.
It took 20 years.
It took
or
a
so,
while,
right?
But yes. That's okay. And I really do. I want to point that out is that it does take strength for us to walk away from something that everyone's telling us is good for us or is, you know, you're popular. Like you said, you have anything you want. Here it is. And to walk away, I mean, wow, that's pretty amazing.
And then when you walk away from that, what's the next step? Is the next step to go into real estate? Do you watch a video with Carlton Sheets saying no money down? Or what do you do? I mean, because to be honest, you're saying processing emotions. Most adults in their 40s and 50s still can't get in touch with their emotions and their feelings.
Yeah.
Most of us have some type of anger that's buried deep, but we're not allowed to process that. A young person who's 23 years old, who just got married and has a wife and has responsibilities and has friends thinking he's crazy. Mm-hmm. You have all these emotions and all these feelings going about. What's the next step for Dean after he decides to retire?
Yeah. So for me, I was fortunate. I had one of my best friends from college, played football with. He was working at a tech company in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we were in close contact. He had reached out to me and said, hey, I know you're done playing. What are you doing? And I was just kind of in that process where I was kind of trying to figure things out. And this is just a handful of months of me kind of trying to figure out where I'm at. And he said, well, hey, I think there's a great opportunity at this company. I think you'd be a great fit. I could pretty much walk you in the door. And that's what he did. He got me right in the door, past all the red tape, past the, you know, months of interviews and all day in-person interview type stuff, and just walked me right to the hiring manager and got me the job. And to me, that felt like this, even though I had this kind of whole thing go down with the NFL, I'm ready to move on to the next chapter, right? I'm just gonna look forward. I'm not gonna dwell on it. I'm not gonna second guess myself. I'm not gonna kind of hang around and try to get to, you know, another position in the NFL. Like, I've already done enough damage. I could see that once you kind of peel back the onion, it starts to unravel with head injuries. You know, it's not like it gets better by itself. So I said, all right, let's do it. So I made that decision. I moved forward. I moved to San Francisco, started working. And to me, I was just thinking, this is going to be a cakewalk. This is going to be so easy because I'm used to training and practicing, putting my body through the most demanding physical, kind of exercise that I could put myself, mentally. People make fun of football players, but football is one of the most complex sports and has so much going on in every single play, down to like what kind of step that you take. Your first step is so important and all the different plays you need to learn. So I was built for war. I was built for the most complex things, for the most stressful situations. You know, sitting at a desk and typing on a keyboard was kind of a joke to me, but I was like, oh, I'll crush it at this and do really good. And I worked my butt off for the first year, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, usually you get pay raises after a year, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then a couple months go by and now it's 14 months and I get called in and start talking about a pay raise. So I'm getting excited. I'm thinking, okay, now I just walked from a 7-figure contract and now I'm starting a $65,000 salary in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is like you're making negative income because it's so expensive there. And I'm living at home in my studio with my new wife, right? In our 424 square foot studio. And money's getting tight. Money's getting tight because, you know, everyone thinks you play a year, you're going to have a ton of money. Didn't have a ton of money. And because I'm on a negative salary, money started to dry up pretty darn fast, really fast. And so I'm at the point I like to tell the story to make it keep it real as possible. Money was really tight for me at that time. And I was, you know, I had a couple credit cards that were, you know, kind of maxed out. You know, it was probably like, you know, for me, it wasn't, I didn't have a ton of money to rack up, but you know, it was probably $15,000, $20,000 on credit cards. And I remember vividly, there was a period of time in there where money was tight and we had to use our Target credit card to go buy groceries at Target because they were selling groceries there too. So my wife had opened the credit card. I'm like, hey, we need to use your credit card to go buy groceries. It's got a $500 limit and we need to use that because money has gotten that tight.
So at this point, she must be saying to herself, why did we get married so early? Why did he leave the NFL? What are we doing in a 400 square foot apartment that we're paying $3,000 a month?
I would say she wasn't thinking that. Yeah, I would say that's just me.
Partially, she was thinking that. I could say partially say that. I mean,
I'm going to stick up for her. Because
truthfully, I don't think she would say it herself. Yeah. She wasn't thinking about that at all.
But you know, you are Dean, right? Cause I would be too. Cause I'd be like, I just got my wife, my Target credit card to go buy groceries. Cause I can't. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of, you tell me which one of us is right. One of us is wrong. I would think that, okay, I have hope for you. I know you're going to do whatever you can to support me. Yes. and the family.
But still at the same time, he's built for war. He's not built to sit in front of a computer, live in a 400 square foot apartment, buying groceries on Target. That's what I'm just saying. So at the point you feel desperate, you feel low, you feel stressed. And
you're talking about him because we're talking about that.
Well, I'm reflecting on his story because we all have very similar stories.
Very similar. We lived in your mom's basement too. We're just putting it out there.
Yes. So,
I'm having a huge ego hit. You know what I mean? Yes. Like I was on top of the world and now I'm feeling like, who the heck am I? You know, like I'm a nobody now. And I remember thinking to myself, I gotta find something that's going to get me back to the top because this wasn't going to be it. Mm-hmm. And sure, I could go the whole climbing the corporate ladder and doing all that stuff. But I just knew in my heart when I sat down on that 14 month, and they said, all right, let's talk about your salary increase. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get to, you know, six figures now. I'm working at a big tech company. They pay good money. They know cost of living is expensive here. They can see my skills. They can see my work ethic. Like they understand the value. And it went from $65,000 to $67,000, a $2,000 increase. And I was just so sick to my stomach. I was embarrassed. I was just feeling kind of humiliated. I'm thinking to myself, dude, you just were in the dream life and now you can't even pay your bills. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who are you? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, I got to figure this out on my own, I guess. And I always told myself that I wouldn't become an entrepreneur growing up because my parents were entrepreneurs. I saw how tough it was to be an entrepreneur. It's tough. It's really hard. And there's lots of ups and downs. I got to experience, you know, trips to Europe and living on the high life, you know, trips to tropical areas and enjoying those memories as a family. And also seeing the tough times when times did get tough, when the economy would shift and, you know, a lot of people were suffering and they would talk about how I don't know if we're going to make payroll. So I'm thinking to myself in this moment, I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I just want to work really hard. I got good work ethic. I want to make good money at a good job. But I just knew I needed to do something. So I went home. I remember thinking to myself, what else do I even like? Like, I don't know much about the world. Like, I'm just barely getting brand new, fresh into the world. What else do I like? And I just remember watching, you know, like HGTV shows with my parents. And, you know, in high school, I was with my girlfriend and now wife, and we'd be watching those shows with my parents and just thinking like, well, I kind of like real estate, you know, maybe I could be like a realtor or an investor or something like that. I don't know what that looks like. So I typed in how to get started in real estate and up popped a free podcast. And it was Sean Terry's Flip to Freedom podcast, How to Get Started with Little to No Money, which sounded great because I had little to no money. And so I thought, all right, let me give it a shot. So I pulled up the podcast, and just his energy, his enthusiasm, all of his morals aligned with mine. And, you know, he was a big family guy, Christian guy, and talking about how he was, you know, helping homeowners in these situations and how everyday people were able to make it in this business. I'm thinking, gosh, if this, you know, pest control guy who was making 20 grand, 30 grand a year is now making several hundred thousand dollars, I know I can do it too. So, just took action. I did my first deal in 3 months.
How was that conversation with your wife? Is she saying, here we go again? At least when you told me about the entrepreneurial venture, you're right. But I mean, 65,000 to 67,000, what's more painful, being an entrepreneur or not being able to afford food in San Francisco? Yeah. I think they're both difficult choices, but the entrepreneur, at least you can control your own destiny. That's part of the thing. And there are ups and downs in life as in the entrepreneurial venture. But what was that conversation with your wife? Now that you want to start real estate, did she say, here we go again, Dean, here's another venture? Was she on board with you?
Yeah, she was supportive, but she was still kind of like, well, how are you going to invest in real estate? You don't have any money, you know? And I'm like, well, this guy's saying he, you know, I can do it with little to no money. And she's very skeptical. So, she likes to ask a lot of questions and figure out like, well, is this even real type of a thing? Or is this a scam? And the one thing that is her superpower and I got to lean on as much as I can is she's got the best intuition. I can't remember the term. What's the term where people can like understand someone's energy and like kind of what kind of person they are? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure what it's called though.
I can't remember the word for it, but she's the kind of person you want to go meet somebody new and just talk to one time, because she'll tell you like, oh yeah, that's a really great person, or I'd be careful about that person. Mm-hmm. And every single time she's been right. And there's been a couple times I've ignored it and it's come back to hurt me really bad. So, so yeah, she was just like, okay, what are we getting into here? You know, be careful, don't get scammed, you know, is this even real type of a thing? So, yeah, I was all geared up and crazy about it, super obsessed. I'd be waking up in the middle of the night just to re-listen to a podcast, 'cause I was just so excited at what I felt was the possibility and the opportunity to get back to that dream life. So I remember telling her too, it might've been like less than a year I was into it, just how confident and excited I was. I think I even told her that she was going to be able to stop working pretty soon. Little I know, I had quite the uphill battle and mistakes I was going to make, but yeah, no, it was pretty hilarious.
And how long ago was that when you started?
So I started, 10 years ago. 10 years ago. Almost to the date. Yeah. 10 years and a couple weeks. Yeah, it's been a wild journey.
So is your wife now a stay-at-home mom?
Yeah. So, our oldest is 7 and, she wasn't working for, the whole year before he was born too. So when she got pregnant, she stopped working. So she's been not working at a job, even though she'll stand up and quickly tell you she's got the hardest job.
You don't have to explain that. Yeah, we got that.
Okay.
We'll let you stop off. Yeah.
But she's living what we call the trad life. Didn't even know what the trad life was. It's the traditional life where she actually stays home with the kids. And a lot of us males who have wives who stay home understand that is probably the most important job on the planet. And it's probably the most challenging job on the planet as well. It's thankless. You're all alone a lot. You're lonely. No one's giving you any kind of adulation. You have to wait 20 years for your kids to grow up. Hopefully they don't go to prison. Hopefully they're actually, you know, they actually become, you know,
my gosh, adults. I don't know what to say about that, but okay. Hopefully.
So hit Dean up with some questions.
I love to hear, especially you remind me a lot of my husband who had the restaurant, had to leave that and became a realtor, like a real estate entrepreneur, which like you said, it's very, I'm not going to use the word risky, but you have to figure it out on your own. You know, as football, somebody's telling you what to do. It's like, all right, put your foot here. Here's your first step. And now it's like you're on your own and you're almost having to explain it to us, which I don't know if your wife knew anything about real estate, but I had no idea. I still hardly know, but I trust in the process, I guess, right? And so in order for you men to be super successful, it really has to start at home, right? And it has to start with your marriage and your communication and our encouragement on you, because I know many times I wasn't very encouraging and certain things didn't go as well as they could have, maybe. Not going to put it up, I'm just saying. So give us an idea what the dynamics are at home as far as your communication with your wife and her support now.
Yeah. I'd say it's been equally a journey there too. Mm-hmm. You know, being an entrepreneur is hard on the family if you don't have it figured out. And I don't want to say I have it figured out now either. Like it's still a journey there. We still have many conversations of like trying to get on the same page and trying to like make sure we're supporting each other the best that we can. And we're being each other's cheerleaders because, man, we've got two of the toughest things you could possibly have going on right now, being an entrepreneur and all the demands that come there. And then being a stay-at-home mom and homeschooling and all the demands that come there. I mean, both of us are going through psychological warfare every single day. We're going through a lot of demanding, stressful things each and every day. So, yeah, it's been very challenging. I think from the beginning, though, just before we had kids, I think the strength that we had, even though there was plenty of challenges that we had to face too, was, you know, again, she would have skepticism on certain things and those would come across sometimes as discouragement, because, you know, she was maybe scared or frightened on like what the outcomes would be or if it would be safe for us, but she never held me back. That's the one thing I would give her a lot of credit is, you know, I feel like I see some relationships where, no, it is very like locked down. It can't happen, right? And I'll hear from one of the spouses of, you know, I got to talk to so-and-so. And it's more so of like, I know that person's going to say no. So I'm just going to, that's my nice way of saying no already. Mm-hmm. And they don't really go anywhere. They're almost like just kind of locked in place. But the one thing that I feel grateful for is I've had a lot of freedom to go make my mistakes, and I've made some very large mistakes that have set us back hundreds of thousands of dollars, and at times where I didn't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to lose, but I lost them and I had to go make it back up just to get back to zero. Mm-hmm. And never at those moments where I had those painful moments that affected our family, you know, she might have said, hey, I told you shouldn't have done it, right? That was the wrong person. I knew that person was wrong. You shouldn't have done that. But it wasn't a, like, I told you so type mm-hmm. of thing, right? And I never was, you know, beat down emotionally or physically from those mistakes. And so that I'm thankful for. I had the freedom to make the mistakes. I wasn't, you know, looked down upon or thought less of, or, you know, spoken to badly because of it. So that's one thing that I think was really helpful for me to overcome those things. Because again, kind of knowing how I was and what I've evolved into and gotten better is I kept a lot of that inside, you know, those mm-hmm. mistakes I made, kind of kept them inside and have learned to kind of talk more about them.
Football and marriage, there's some similarities. I mean, I'm gonna make a joke, but I'm not gonna make a joke. But it's teamwork. I mean, if you don't have teamwork, yes. if all the players on offense are not on the same page, yeah. and one person breaks the play is done with. And it's the same mm-hmm. thing with marriage. People don't understand that if me and Julia are not on the same, you know, page as we need to try to do this. If it doesn't work, don't cast blame. Let's learn from that mistake and let's try to get better. Same thing with football. It's all about practice. It's all about repetition. Yep. It's all about taking responsibility. It's all about, you know, working together. And I think that's what makes a relationship and a marriage work. And I think sort of the same thing I can relate with you as well. Yeah. I never got blamed for losing money, which I've lost hundreds of thousands and probably.
Well, blamed for, but I think like you both of your, I think are saying is that we didn't remind you constantly. We didn't hold it against you. I think it's important because we should be okay, learn from our mistakes. And that means to go back and think about those people that you did business with and didn't go well. I think that's good because we do have to fall. We do have to get up and try it again. Mm-hmm. And to have a really solid spouse at home, the communication is important. I'm curious, Dean, you mentioned a couple of times early in your relationship that you kept a lot to yourself and you did it alone. And I'm curious at what point, maybe it hasn't come 100% yet, but do you find yourself, because I think it's trust. I think it's trust in our spouse that we can say, hey, I'm having a hard time. And knowing that they're not going to be like, how could you have a hard time? You know, you're this big guy and you're strong. And do you find yourself opening up more to your wife and trusting that she is going to just be there to listen in a sense? Because you did say that early on, is that you kept a lot to yourself, which I think is a hard thing to do in marriage.
Yeah. I think thinking back to those moments, you know, of those dark times where, you know, I had some big losses and I'm now having to look myself in the mirror again and say, get back up and go fight it. I think a lot of the reason why I kept it to myself instead of bringing it to the marriage was, I think personally, just maybe my own beliefs or kind of what I'd heard before too, is, you know, like, don't bring your problems home. You know, don't bring your problems home. I made some really big messes, right? And for me, I didn't want to bring that home and spill all that stress and put all that on my wife and have her have to deal with it. Like, I wanted to shoulder that burden myself. And so maybe there was some good to it, but at the same time, there was probably more harm, because that resulted in me kind of just putting my head down and trying to dig out on my own. And there was a stretch of time where I just, you know, those years kind of went by where I wasn't really talking that much to her. I wasn't sharing that much with her because I was just fighting and in fight or flight mode to get back out. And we talk about it to this day of like, you know, that's something that you can't do. And going back to the sports analogy, you got to work as a team, and you have, part of working as a team is communication. And when things have been really good for us, it's because our communication was really good. When things aren't good for us and are rocky, it's because our communication is really bad. Right. Mm-hmm. And it always comes back down to that communication. If you can communicate with your partner, you can pretty much work through anything. Right. And it just starts with that communication.
Yeah.
How did you guys decide to homeschool the kids? Was it early on or when the kids were born? How did you make that decision?
Yeah. So, the world kind of forced us. Don't know how political you like to get on this podcast.
Say whatever you want.
Let it rip, huh? Okay.
It has nothing to do with politics. It's just a general feeling. We're making statements about our lives. What Dean does with his life, what I do with my life.
Yeah.
It's just a reflection of our values and our beliefs. It doesn't mean that everyone else has to run out there. Mm-hmm. Just because we don't approve of what's going on in the media and every other facet. I think that's just a testament to having an open conversation. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody listening to this is on the fence saying, I'm not really, you know, when we started homeschooling 20 something years ago, I felt like a loser because no one was homeschooling back then. I'm working at a restaurant with public school teachers asking me, hey, where does your kid go to school? I'm like 27 Kayla Lane. It's my house. I felt like such a loser. And like, thankfully she was the backbone and she's like, you know what? We're doing this because it's great for the kids. It's great for the family. And thankfully that's why we did it. And I stuck with it because I trusted in her and I trusted that she would do a lot of the work, which is a lot of the work. It's a huge amount of sacrifice. 20 years ago, we didn't have Zoom. We didn't have all these things online. You're basically by yourself at home with your kids all day long. And I'm at work and then I come home and the house is a mess. I'm like, hey, what's going on here? I didn't see what happened throughout the day. So it can be challenging. So for you, that conversation, I mean, that decision, how did you guys come about it?
Yeah. So we started, 2019, my oldest was 4 and a half or so at the time. We started him in pre-K, at a private school, downtown La Jolla and in San Diego, living back in San Diego. And, it was a great experience. It was a really great experience. And we were like, actually really excited about this new journey of school and friendships and parents that we were going to meet. And we had an amazing experience that whole first year. They had, school plays and school get-togethers and the fundraisers and all these different things. And we're starting to make these new friendships. And, our oldest is starting to make new friends as well. And we were just really excited about where it was going. And then in the springtime there, March of 2020, we're about to end the school year. And there's still a month or two left and the whole world shuts down. Now, the reason I asked that question at the beginning, because I like to call it the scamdemic. I think all that was planned and by no mistake. But, the world shuts down and everybody's just kind of, trying to figure things out. Mm-hmm. And our oldest, he's not one that, is going to sit there on Zoom and watch mm-hmm. anything and be entertained. He wants to be
he's
out playing
and stuff.
He's not
supposed to. That's not the goal of a five-year-old. I mean, an adult can basically sit
well,
on for 45
just boys in
minutes.
General are not
boys in general. It's not good for them, yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned the scandemic. I wouldn't go as far myself to call that, but when you tell me 2 weeks to flatten the curve and we're 2 years later locked down in certain parts of the country and people are still wearing masks and all the science has been refuted against it and people still can't accept that. My wife is touching me because you've quote unquote triggered me now. Yeah. I don't talk about COVID anymore, but there's so many fallacies that we proved. And yet people who are much more intelligent than you and myself put together are still talking about things as if it's proven science. We've known that and it shattered tons of lives. And who has it hurt most? People who are poor. People who are locked down, didn't have computers, didn't have access to internet, couldn't send their kids to school.
But so, I have to say, homeschooling went up.
Yes.
I think 10%. Something crazy. Yes. And so there's always something good that comes out of everything bad.
So you're so March of 2020, you're like, okay, we're locked down. I can't have my five-year-old on Zoom. What do I got to do next?
Yeah. I got all my triggers too. So I we're sitting there trying to figure out what the heck we do. And the next school year rolls around, right? We flow into summer, next school year comes around. And, the first couple weeks we were all kind of confused what was going on. And my wife, who's got, again, the best intuition out of anybody that I personally know, quickly was like, I don't believe any of this stuff. No, I was fooled for a week or so. But no, this is, so she was the one walking on the beach in La Jolla and the police were showing up trying to arrest her for walking on the beach, doing some super dangerous stuff.
Now they got to meet. Now that was a sign. When we get up the podcast, you got to give me your phone number and the wife's got to meet because I'm getting yelled at stores because I'm wearing a mask, but she's not wearing a mask. They're yelling at me as if I'm the one who's, I'm obeying your damn rules. She's not.
Yes. What is we feel safe behind you. That's
I'm
all.
Okay. That's the case. Okay.
So my wife, she's, literally at the beach calling me, I'm about to get arrested. You need to get down here. And I'm trying to like reason with these police officers, not to take her away and lock her up. She's got kids and stuff, but that was our life. And, man, we were under persecution for a couple of years there. And I will say the best thing that came out of that whole experience, as not fun as it all was, is because of my wife's strength, she gave me the courage to find a voice. She really did. Because still to that day, I was always very PC, down the middle, not wanting to offend anybody.
Rule follower.
Rule follower, but at the same time, we'll still break rules in the right way, right? Mm-hmm. But man, the wife really gave me a lot of courage to step up and stand up for what I believe in and understand what I believe in too. Mm-hmm. So, real quick, we, within that period of time, all these things were happening and gave us clarity on kind of like where things were going, especially in California. There's a bunch of nutsos out here in California. I mean, probably the worst of them. And, school became clear that it wasn't going to go back to normal and they almost wanted it not to go back to normal. It seems so. It wasn't even an option for us. There was no option. And we were left trying to figure out, well, what other options are there? Mm-hmm. And the first thing that we had done is found a lot of like-minded people who didn't want to go into any of that kind of environment. And we're already leaning towards, you know, taking back the education around what the kids are learning, what values they were learning, the people that they were around, right, the information they were receiving. And a collection of people formed their own kind of like homeschool pod at one of the friends' houses. And they literally built a school in their backyard. And that went on for about a year and a half. And then the people who started it just kind of like had a total midlife crisis and like moved, and everything just fell apart like within a week or so. So now it turned into, okay, well, now what are we going to do? And my wife, feeling, you know, empowered, she took it on herself to, you know, spend an insane amount of time researching and understanding like what type of material she needed to be teaching the kids, and took that on. So the room right next to me is a complete classroom with way more material than any normal classroom has, I can tell you that. And so that's what she does with the kids now.
So Dean, I was listening to Jordan Peterson before I let my wife wrap this up. I was listening to Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about totalitarianism. The lies don't start from the top down. They start from the bottom up. And once everyone starts to live the lie is when totalitarian takes place. If there's even 10 people screaming, maybe your wife was one of them and my wife is one of them. So there's two people that are there to at least adhere to some type of truth. Totalitarianism can't take over. Because if the lie had been perpetuated, we'd still be wearing masks. We'd still be getting vaccinated 17 times. And I think the people who were able to stand up, and I think your wife and my wife were role models to myself and to yourself to say, you know, we need to actually stand by our values. Because I was very fortunate. I didn't have to get vaccinated for a job. I'm an entrepreneur. I have my own company. So I didn't have to make that difficult decision of, I got to feed the family, I got to get vaccinated. And she stood by me and said, she wouldn't let me. So that's the kind of person she is. I mean, yes. it's health and your values over trying to make money and supporting the family. Right. So we would go back, live in a 400 square foot apartment with the six kids. I know she would have done that. It would have been hard for me, but that's the kind of, I guess, the kind of relationship that you need to have with your wife. But those are the people that stood up throughout this crisis and were calling BS. And that's the reason why we didn't fall into that total darkness. So kudos to your wife for doing that.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I would love to meet her.
We're going to make that happen.
Some fun conversations.
Anyway, Dean, I could keep going on but you know, how do the listeners get a hold of you? Where can they find out more about Dean? Because I know you've got some mentoring programs, you've got coaching programs.
Yeah, tell us about
those. I'd love for people to go to your website and even to learn more about your story, because it is an inspirational story. You're starting out as a football player, then you go back, then you make $65,000 a year, then you're going to make 67. Like, I don't want to do this. And you listen to a podcast, get on that podcast. You're like, I love this guy, man. He's got a bunch of energy. You do your first deal within 3 months, and then you're off to the races in real estate, but it's difficult. And as you're making money throughout that period, COVID does hit, and it does change the life, and it does change the dynamics of your family. You had this great experience of sending your kids to school, and now you got to pull them out, and now you have to start all over again. And now there's a lot of stress on your wife, because it's really not with the norm with homeschooling, but she figured it out. And I can almost guarantee you, 10 years from now, you'll look back and go, thank the Lord that I made this decision to be able to teach my kids. So where can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, I love connecting with people. I always give a call to action, as I'm a real person who answers DMs and loves to connect with people. So you can always connect with me at deanrogers.com. You'll see all my social media stuff on there, Instagrams at Dean Rogers Real Estate. But yeah, check me out at deanrogers.com. Find out more about me. Find out more ways we can connect. And of course, I have the coaching program helping people how to get started in real estate, in my opinion, the best way. So love connecting with as many people as possible.
Julia, any
I love to hear your story. Is absolutely amazing, because you had it all. You literally had every boy's dream, right? And you let it go. And you fell and you struggled, and you had an amazing woman to back you up. And I think that's, you know, a lot of times we don't realize who's in our life to give us that hand. You know, I'm sure faith in God also played a huge role in your life, which is so needed. Yep. But there is someone in your life that helped you, that picked you up. And, you know, I just encourage everyone to just, you know, there are people in your lives. A lot of times we don't even realize it. A lot of times they're just like literally sitting next to us and we don't really give them that. Hey, thank you. You know what I mean?
Like, I got to say thank you for the podcast.
Yes, you do.
Okay, I will say
but
thank
I do. Your story is absolutely incredible because like I said, you gave up everything and you literally didn't know what was going to come next. And you obviously had faith and look where you are now. So I just want to, that's amazing.
Thanks, Dean. Yeah. We appreciate
Thanks,
it, brother.
DeanRodgers.com.
Go out and check his stuff out. And if you want to get into real estate, start into real estate. I know his opinion merits a lot. I don't agree wholeheartedly, probably about 80%, but listen, wholesaling and getting into it, that's the way to do it. Because listen, he did it. He had no money.
Yep.
He had no experience. He jumped in. He started. Now he's got $10 million of rentals and he's continued to build a portfolio. So once again, thanks for being on, brother. I appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.